What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another weekend of down, or another week of down to the wire, Mason. We're back. Week six in the books, going into week seven. Half the season is over. Like I've been saying, really, for the past couple weeks, it's flying by. And hey, we're both happy again.
Yeah, like, look at that. It's about time. And look, Cam, I gotta be honest, man. We finally made it. All this year, we finally made it to basketball season. It's here. It's in full swing, too. I know you're happy about it, too. This is the best time of the year. We have football going on. We have basketball starting up. Baseball playoffs, whatever. But basketball season is here, baby. And I know we're going to talk all about it.
Mason, basketball season doesn't start until after Christmas.
A long
after
pause.
Christmas, okay. Get out of here.
All right. We can stick to football, I guess.
A lot happened. It was an impactful weekend of college football, Mason. We had the Red River Shootout. At the same time, the LSU Missouri game was going on, and then we had the big game in the SEC West with Bama A&M. We'll probably try and keep it a little bit shorter this week and kind of recap and focus in on a couple games. So let's actually start with the game that game day was at, and was probably the game of the day, Oklahoma and Texas. Give me your thoughts on what you thought there. I know both of us picked Texas. We had Texas actually ranked number one in our poll, which we seem to have cursed them now. What were your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, I think you have to start it off with Oklahoma's defense. They came out and they played well. I know they ended up giving up like 30 points. But I think overall their defense is a lot more improved than they were last year. And that's a testament to Venables. Obviously, he was a great defensive coach. Came over. They were terrible last year. But they've gotten that thing turned around right now. And they're looking really dangerous right now. Dylan Gabriel's playing awesome at quarterback for them right now. But really, like, I just think the story of Oklahoma season right now, you have to start with their defense and how much improvement they've made.
Yeah, their defense has definitely improved from last year. And it was really nice to finally see them play really stiff competition to see how good they really are. I mean, whenever you were hearing probably a lot from individuals leading up to this game of Oklahoma really hasn't been super tested. We don't really know what to expect from them. You'd be silly if you didn't expect this game to be a really good and competitive football game. And they played a really clean football game. They didn't turn the ball over, didn't have a ton of penalties. And then their offense was able to run the ball on Texas, which nobody really thought, at least this year's version of Texas, that you'd be able to do. But seemed to be same old Texas of old, of not being able to stop the run. And like you said, Dylan Gabriel played really well. And The killer for Texas was the turnovers and being 1-for-3 in the red zone. They scored one time out of three tries in the red zone, and that's what killed them. I mean, you lose by four, you turn the ball over three times, I believe it was, and you only score one time once you get inside the red zone. You're basically asking for a loss. And there they were with the – minute and 15 left to go to try and win the game. I mean, they were right there. And then, dude, like, prevent defense is probably my least favorite. At some point, these defensive coaches have to learn, like, how to not, like, prevent defense just kills you every single time. You see it every single week in these games, whether it's even in the NFL or whether it's in college football. Prevent defense hardly ever works, and it's just maddening to me watching it. Like, it just hurts, because like I knew, I was like, hey, they're gonna go down the field and score. Like, it's not a question.
So I want to go back to what you were talking about with Texas defense and Oklahoma being able to run on them. I thought Oklahoma came out with a really great game plan. I know they do kind of run the hurry up offense, but they were basically getting on the ball every single time after they were tackled short, whatever, first down, XYZ. They were getting on the ball. They were running the play almost immediately. And you could tell probably by about halftime or a little halfway into the third quarter, Texas's D-line was shot. I saw a couple plays where their big star freshman Sweat was just struggling to get up and down the field. And so you could tell that they came in with the game plan and they executed it, man. And it was really impressive. I don't think that this is the end of Texas for this year, honestly. Like, I think we'll definitely see this game again at the end of the season in the Big 12 championship. And honestly, the winner of that game is going to get their playoff bid. And I honestly expect the next game in the championship to be out even better than this one, if that's even possible, because this was an excellent game.
Yeah, and this game is going to be an SEC game starting next year. How insane is that? But yeah, and let's kind of move it to the Texas side of things. I mean, we kind of already talked about their defensive front really wasn't able to get pressure all game, which was, again, one of the big things that everybody was super excited about with Texas was the defensive line and the defensive front seven being able to get pressure and being able to stop the run. And they weren't able to do either one of those things against Oklahoma. And one of Oklahoma's perceived weaknesses was the offensive line. And so it was super impressive that Oklahoma was able to bow up and run and be able to protect Gabriel. And it also helped that Gabriel was able to escape the pocket and use his feet, move around, scramble, whatever. But Texas really wasn't able to do what they had been doing all year on the defensive side of the ball. And then there's something about the Texas offense that still just isn't fully clicking yet. And it's kind of a similar conversation that we had about Florida State a few weeks ago. And you really just can't put your finger on it. I mean, Quinn Ewers was 31 of 37, which is really good. 3 for 346 and a touchdown. He did have the two interceptions. One of them was like a dropped and batted ball by the tight end. So you can't really blame that one on him. But the first one definitely was. I mean, he threw it right into coverage. But they seem to have suffered, and we saw this in the Alabama game, and we've kind of seen this in other spots where, like, for whatever reason, they just struggle finishing drives.
Yeah.
Which does, to me at least, doesn't really make sense considering the offensive firepower they have on the outside, what they have at tight end, multiple tight ends. Their running back room is still pretty good, and you have a really good quarterback. So I don't know what the issue is for them. Now, obviously, Oklahoma did things to prevent them from going in the end zone, but part of that is also just like self-inflicted wounds of turning the ball over and just not executing. So what are your thoughts on the Texas offense to trying to get it all together?
I think I'm going to be careful when I say this, but I think it might be a little bit of Quinn Ewers and his confidence. When you think about Quinn Ewers, I honestly, like, you could peg him as one of the top quarterbacks in the nation. Whereas I feel like if we kind of looked at him more in like the Stetson Bennett role, I feel like he would be a lot more successful than he is right now. Not saying that he's bad or anything, like he's having a good season, but I feel like he almost looks at himself as Caleb Williams and he has to make every single play instead of just distributing the ball and being a point guard. Like if he was more of a point guard, more of a Stetson Bennett and just passing it around and managing the game very well, I feel like me personally, I would have a lot more confidence in where Texas is right now. I just kind of think that he tries to overdo it a little bit and it worked really well in his favor against Alabama. But when it comes to the game this weekend against Oklahoma, there were just some passes that I felt like he should have either dropped it off to the running back, but instead he was kind of going for the big shot. So I kind of think that's where I land on it. But I mean, it could be like 30 different things if we're being honest, but I think a lot of it really kind of does fall on Quinn Ewers.
Yeah. I mean, it's that and wide receivers got to catch the ball. Yeah. Can't drop it. You got to be able to consistently run the ball. I mean, it's probably a combination of a lot of things. I will say, I mean, it's kind of hard to say much about yours. It's specifically this game, if we look at it in a vacuum here. I mean, again, yeah. He was 31 of 37. I mean, he threw, what, 6 incomplete balls, and 2 of those were interceptions, so only 4 of them hit the ground. I mean, 4 passes in a whole game that hit the ground.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I mean,
see, that's kind of where my point was. Like, it's hard to blame it all on him, but I do feel like I don't really question their run game. I also don't really question their wide receivers. Their offensive line is what it is. So I guess by default, it kind of has to come back to Quinn Ewers. But at the same time, it's just like, if that's what your problem is, then you're in good shape. So.
Yeah. So, and we both agree. I mean, we are both still super high on Texas.
Yeah, for sure.
I would be completely shocked if we don't get a rematch in the Big 12 championship game. Speaking of Big 12 championship game, if it is a rematch and Oklahoma is undefeated, Texas only has the one loss, do both of them get in the playoff if Texas wins?
I was just about to ask you this because I feel like we're about to be in a really, really tough situation when it comes down to playoff stuff at the very end of the season. Because if you look at it, man, like, my guess is we're going to have probably Michigan coming out of the Big Ten. And then you're probably going to have a one loss Ohio State or a one loss Penn State coming out too. And then you also have what's going to go on in the SEC. You're going to have Georgia probably, and then maybe Alabama if they run the table and win the SEC. So at that point, it's one loss Bama champion, one loss Georgia, one loss Oklahoma, one loss Texas, one loss Michigan, or no loss Michigan.
Whatever happens in the Pac-12, you know. Yeah.
And then you got Florida State. Yeah.
Florida State and North Carolina and the ACC. I mean, yeah.
It's going to get tricky at the end of the season. As a Bama fan right now, sitting on one loss, I feel like, I mean, obviously, like, we have to win the SEC if we're going to get in. But what happens if Alabama does win and then you're sitting with Georgia with one loss and then all these other teams are sitting there with one loss too? It's going to get tricky. It's going to get a little sketchy, but I don't know. There's
a lot of football left to be played, and so a lot of this is going to play out in ways that maybe we didn't expect it to. But, yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you. I mean, you could be sitting in very similar spots all throughout the country.
Yeah.
And like I said last week, I mean, right now my favorite for the SEC, I don't care what Georgia did against the Wildcats. Don't care. My favorite for the SEC after the game is going to be Alabama right now as it stands. I mean, they have the defense and their offense seems to be getting better. Jalen Milroe was able to actually pass to win the game, which is something that I definitely didn't think that he could do. No. You didn't think that he could probably do. Nobody thought that he could do, and he did it. So congratulations to him, which gives Bama more confidence. So he would be my favorite. But then, like, when going into conference championship weekend, you could be looking at, okay, a one-loss Bama against an undefeated Georgia, a one-loss Texas going against an undefeated Oklahoma, a one-loss Oregon or Washington going up against the undefeated Oregon or Washington, however it plays out this weekend.
Yep.
Undefeated Michigan going up against whoever else in the East, and then behind them having a one-loss Penn State or Ohio State. And then in the ACC, you have an undefeated Florida State probably playing like against a one-loss or undefeated North Carolina. Like,
yeah, it's going to get sketchy. It's going to get real sketchy.
Hey, what is going to happen, you know?
I actually want that to happen. Honestly, I think it'd be fun to watch because, like, everybody's been going crazy about the 12-team playoff, and it feels like this would be the perfect year to start it. But we're going to have – I honestly expect us to have probably 3 teams that are going to be pissed off at the end of the year that they're not in the playoffs.
If it plays out the way that I just described, Mason, this is probably going to be the most entertaining conference championship week that we've had – in years.
So
like, you're gonna want to watch every single one, whereas like in past years, like, okay, I'll probably watch the SEC championship, I might flip on, probably won't watch the Big Ten, maybe I'll watch the Pac-12, maybe I'll watch the ACC if it's not a blowout. Big 12 is usually really entertaining, but no, it's gonna be like, dude, we gotta watch all of them, see what happens.
Okay, so let's just, for jokes and giggles, whatever, let's just sit here and say Bama wins SEC, Michigan wins Big Ten, Oregon wins Pac-12, Florida State wins ACC, and Texas wins the Big 12. Who's getting left out?
I think Texas gets left out.
Really? Because it would be probably undefeated Oregon, probably undefeated Florida State, undefeated Michigan, and then one loss SEC champ. But Texas head-to-head.
And I was sitting here thinking, I was like, okay, Texas or Florida State. I'm picking Florida State, obviously. But yeah. No, if it comes down to Texas,
they have the head-to-head.
Then I wouldn't be surprised they put Bama in just because it's Bama. If that were to happen, Mason, if it gets down to four spot between Bama and Texas, and Texas gets left out, there will be riots in the street.
Riots. I'm a known Florida State hater right now, apparently. I almost would suspect, because I just, but then at the same time, it's so hard to leave out an undefeated team, which I don't think they'll do. But I don't know how you leave out a one loss SEC champ. Obviously, I guess this would have to be the scenario because Texas does have the head to head, but man. Yeah, I was thinking about that the other day and it was stressing me out.
The thing that the SEC does not have going up for it this year, as it did in past years, is that it's not as strong this year. Yeah. So that's going to be a little bit of the knock. That's going to be the thing that people are going to point to is, hey, they're just not as strong. But yeah. The Big 12 really isn't as strong either.
No, I mean, they're just top
heavy. So the only thing you really have is again, the head-to-head. It's the committee, so they just pick and choose whatever thing they want to use that just so happens to go with who they want to put in. So that's how it is at the end of the day. Let's move on. So we talked about Oklahoma and Texas. Let's go on to my game, LSU in Missouri. How much did you watch of that game, or were you like eyes glued on the TV for the Oklahoma Texas game?
I was actually back and forth for a good bit of it. I was watching I watched most of the first half. And honestly, the entire first half, I was just feeling pretty bad for you. Because Missouri just looked like the Kansas City Chiefs out there, just going up and down the field at will against LSU. But you know, something clicked in the second half for LSU, and I don't know what it was. I can't really give you an answer. It honestly, to me, just looked like they were playing a little bit harder than they were in the first half. But yeah, it was interesting from my end, to say the least, on that game.
Did you see any of my tweets that I did during the game, especially in the first half? Yeah,
I saw you going through the struggle. I did.
It was dark times in the first half. Let me just tell you. Okay. No, literally whenever it started, it was, here we go again.
Yeah.
And then it seemed to be like a worse of here we go again. Cause it was like 22-7. I was like, what the heck are we like? Is this it? Am I just like watching our hopes and dreams just flush down the toilet against freaking Missouri? Like, are we really about to get run out the building by freaking Missouri? Like, what is happening right now? But the offense got it together. And then the defense, I don't know what happened. They for sure changed up their coverage. They were starting out with man, which obviously wasn't working because you had freaking Andre Sam being man up against Luther Burden, which for some reason we thought was a great idea. Yeah, let's have the Marshall transfer. Let's have the guy that transferred from Marshall cover one of the best receivers in the freaking country. That sounds like a great idea to scheme that up, guys. Great idea. But no, they decided to, you know what, we can't do this, obviously, so let's go to a zone. And then Harold Perkins had the pick. And I think that's what really sparked it, was the Harold Perkins interception. Because from that point forward, the defense got stops. Yeah. And in the second half, Missouri scored, I think, 14 points all in the second half, or 17 points. I can look at it here. Let me pull it up, actually. In the second half, Missouri only scored 14 points in the second half. Oof. After scoring 25 in the first half. So, yeah. That is obviously it's still not great. The performance isn't great by the defense. I'm not pretending that it was. And if anybody is acting like it was, you're a fool and you need to take a chill pill. But that's all we need because of how great this LSU offense is. and how great Jaden Daniels is. If there was no Joe Burrow in this program, Jaden Daniels would be the best quarterback in the history of LSU football.
What is it with you guys and Monday Wonders?
That's how good he is, man. It's insane how good he has been. And all the haters at the beginning of the year that are talking about wanting to bench him and play Nuss, especially after the Florida State game and all this junk, can shut up and not saying a single word the rest of the season. The homeboy took the team on his back with hurt ribs. And we're going to get to the official. We're going to get to the officials here in a minute, Mason, because it was an absolute joke all weekend. Okay. Not even just in that game, but in others. But he gets late hit, hurts his ribs, and then comes out the next drive and runs for like 50 yards on a third and 10 or something. It's like, okay, we got a dog. Like, he is going to do anything he can and everything he can to win the game. And he put the team on his back and won the game and brought the offense and controlled everything. So super, super impressed with the team. They came out. The defense finally got together. They finally got some pressure. Mason Smith actually made some plays, made a sack, batted the ball down, really looked involved, which is really what we've been waiting for all year. And so hopefully he's really starting to ramp up now, having confidence and getting good technique now with Pete Jenkins being there and helping the guys out on the D-line.
Harold Perkins. 82-year-old?
Yes, yes. Best in the business, dude. Best in the business. No. Harold Perkins. Listen to this, Harold. Let me pull up Harold Perkins' stat line for you real quick. Defense, Harold Perkins. Harold Perkins against Mizzou had three total tackles, an interception, and a blocked field goal, and a PBU. What a stat line, dude. You get an interception, a PBU, a few tackles, and a blocked field goal on one game. That's a day. What a day. And that's the impact we want to see. Let's get to the officials, Mason. I don't know if you saw any of these fools in this LSU Missouri game. Disconcerting signals called like five times because defensive players clapped.
Yes, I think I saw that.
I was like, what? Okay. And then it's so stupid. Like, I get it because, like, if you're doing the clap on offense, like the ball, you don't want the defensive clapping to, you know, cause a false or whatever. But, like, they're like defensive backs that are like clapping to get the crowd in the game or clapping to their guys to try and give signals to. It's like, no, you can't do that. It's like, all right, whatever. Yeah. And then like there's a goal line and goal to go. This is right before Jaden gets hurt. They run a QB sneak and they call him short at like the 1-inch line.
I was going to ask you this.
When the whole offense, the whole offense is in the end zone. They're in the end zone. How are you calling him down early? And how are you not reviewing it after that?
So I was watching at that point. They run the QB sneak. He's obviously in. So I was like, all right, cool. So I flip it to the Texas game real quick. And they run like two plays. They go to commercial. I flip it back to the LSU game. LSU's still on the 1-yard line with no touchdown. And I'm just sitting there like mind blown, wondering what happened the entire time. Like, he was obviously like laying in the end zone.
They called him short. They called him short and didn't even review it, Mason. Didn't even review it. And then the next play, we run another sneak and we get stoned. But then they rip his helmet off and trying to rip the ball. And so we get a 15-yard penalty for face mask, so we get new fresh set of downs. And then it's the play where Jaden gets around and scores and gets late hit, but they call it back because of a phantom holding call, but then don't call a late hit on the guy that hit Jaden as he's standing in the end zone. And so then he has to come out of the game. Nussmeier comes in, we have a bad snap, so we're already back. And so then it's just like, okay, well, I guess it's over. And then we missed the kick for the field goal. So it's like,
I thought it was over. I thought it was done after that.
What the heck do you mean? Like, we literally scored like five plays ago.
Yeah.
Five plays ago. It was awful. And then, and we can talk about this for like just real quick. Miami, Georgia Tech with Mario Cristobal.
Oof, buddy.
Rough. Have you seen the picture of the running back?
Yeah.
He was down.
Really?
His elbow was clearly on the ground while still having possession.
I can give zero cares in the world about him being down, because how idiotic is it of him to actually run the ball right there? 36 seconds left on the clock. All you have to do is take a knee.
Listen, I fully agree with you. I'm fully there with you. I get it. And like, he should be getting all the heat he's getting for that decision. But at the end of the day here, Mason, if the refs call this right, they win the game.
They don't deserve it to be called right after that. They do not deserve it.
They don't deserve to follow the rules of a freaking football game that tells you he's down.
No.
Come on, Mason.
If your coach wants to be an idiot, play stupid games, get stupid results. Your coach wants to be an idiot, let him be an idiot. That's what he gets.
He did effort to find out.
Yeah,
he did
effort
to find out.
That's why Mario Cristobal is a month. Cristobal is a Sunday to Friday coach. You don't want him on Saturdays. You just want him to recruit for you. Bring somebody in to coach the games. It's not even the first time he's done this. He did this at Oregon too, and the exact same thing happened. They fumbled the ball with like 20 seconds left and then lost the game because he didn't want to take a knee. Get out of here with that. He deserved what he got because he wanted to be dumb.
Again, I fully agree with you, but I'm just saying he was down. Okay. That's all I'm saying. So we can just point the finger at Mario for being an idiot for not taking a knee. And then we can also point the finger at the idiotic refs who obviously can't see for the life of them if a player is down or not, or if a whole offense is sitting in the end zone for a touchdown. Like, apparently it's too hard to do your job. I guess. I don't understand.
Bad weekend for the refs, for sure.
Let's go on to Bama A&M.
Yes, Jimbo. Happy birthday, rough. Jimbo. Just want to give you a shout out. Hope that buyout treats you well, buddy. Look, so I'm happy about the game for sure. I'm still a little neutral on this team in a weird way. The penalties, they just hurt me at this point. Like, I'm so broken by the penalties that it just feels like it's never going to be cured. I've been sitting here for 3 years now telling you, oh, we'll get it fixed this game. Yeah, Nick Saban will have it covered. We're fine. Well, the penalties will be fine. Oh, we're playing a big game? No, I'm not worried about the penalties. No, that's done. I am forever worried about penalties at this point now. We had about 100 false start penalties. It was great. So I'll get my sadness out of the way first, just with that. my concern. But other than that, I was super excited about the performance that was put on by Jalen Milroe. I mean, coming into the game, I knew that the game was either going to be won or lost by him. He was going to have to play well because of how good Texas A&M's D-line is. Like, you're not going to be able to run on those guys. And it showed from the jump. Like, just right off bat, we could get nothing going in the run game. And honestly, dude, he came out and he played great throwing the ball through the air. And I was insanely surprised. He had a bunch of incredible throws. He had a couple touchdowns that I would have never expected him to fit the ball into the windows that he did. But he did it, man. And honestly, like, I think a game like that just builds an insane amount of confidence for him. So I'm excited to see what he's going to be doing moving forward. But as great as he played, this defense is incredible, man. This defense is a lot of fun to watch. They got a lot of pressure on Max Johnson. And I just have to give a shout out to Caleb Downs. I feel like he's going to kind of go under the radar a little bit, but we don't win that game without Caleb Downs. And that's not a joke. In the third quarter, after Milroe threw his interception, we were already down by 7 at that point, and then he comes out and makes an incredible catch to get us the ball back, and we go down and score on that. And I know a lot of people are going to say that's the biggest play of the game, but I think the play that he made at the very end of the game was an even bigger one. Texas A&M was on about the 15, looking to score. They were down by 9, and Max Johnson threw it to his brother, the big tight end, and Caleb Downs made a 1-on-1 tackle against the tight end on about the 3 or 4 yard line to prevent them from scoring a touchdown, which eventually led to them kicking the field goal. And I got to be honest, man, that's a completely different game at the end there, because that was their last possession. And it's completely different if Alabama's going into their last possession only up by 2 instead of being up by 6. To me, it just changes the level of difficulty that they were facing at that point. And for a true freshman to make a tackle like that in that moment of the game against a lot bigger guy than him, I was super impressed, man. I thought it was awesome. He played well. The whole defense played well. But again, it just comes back to the penalties, man. We got to clean that up at some point, or it's going to bite us in the butt again. But I think Texas A&M on the road is probably going to be equally as big of a test as LSU is going to be. But, you know, we were able to go in and get the win again in a hostile environment. So, like, it, I feel great. I just wish the turnovers wouldn't be there.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be two different tests. Yeah, right? I mean, Texas sure. A&M is the test of, hey, they have a really good defense. Y'all have a really good defense. Who can out, you know, perform the other? Whereas the LSU game that's going to come up is going to be, hey, can you outscore them? Because, yeah. I mean, that's how LSU has to play this year. But, yeah, I mean, I was super impressed with the Alabama defense in the second half, only giving up 3 points the entire half after giving up 17 the first, was super impressive. And it came down to y'all's defensive front just manhandled A&M's offensive line and basically just choked them out. There was a specific drive when it was tied at 17 that A&M had, where they had a 4th-and-1 at the Alabama 45.
Yep.
And Jimbo decides to punt the ball back.
So, okay, I want to talk about this for a minute. In the moment, I actually really didn't think that was a terrible move by Jimbo. I know, like, all the analytics are going to tell you to go for that, right? But at that point, like, yes, Milroe's numbers were nice, but at that point, you're sitting there saying, can Jalen Milroe go, if we punt this ball, put it within the 5 or the 10-yard line, can Jalen Milroe go 80 yards and actually put up a touchdown or put up points for this team against our defense? I think that's the way he was looking at it, because he probably didn't think Milroe was going to be able to do that. So in the moment, I didn't hate it as a move for them. And at the same time, they were kind of struggling to get those in-between yards because they weren't really running on us. And at the same time, we were getting an insane amount of pressure on the quarterback. So I didn't hate the move for it, but I just think if you're in that moment, you do have to be a little bit more aggressive and go for that.
I mean, I think you have to be aggressive. I mean, if you look at Alabama's previous drives, again, this is in the third quarter, in the second half. If you look at Bama's drives before that punt, you had the opening drive of the half, which ended up in an interception, but they had already drove the ball pretty well until they threw the pick on the A&M 28. Then they got the ball right back and went 6 more plays for 40 yards and a touchdown, and Milroe looked good. So you already kind of had 2 kind of back-to-back drives, excuse me, where the Bama offense looked like it was kind of getting going. And so that's the point of the game where it's a, hey, we're at home. Yeah. We still have a really good defense. Let's try and trust our defense, but we need to go out and take the game. And to punt in that kind of situation, I think, and obviously didn't lose the team because they still fought all the way. So I don't want to say that, but like, it just didn't show, like, you obviously didn't have confidence in your team to go try and win the game at that moment. And again, like, you scored 3 points in the second half. And part of that is because Bama was able to get unreal pressure all game long. I feel like there was also some mismanagement of the clock in A&M's final drive when they ended with a field goal. They called a pointless, to me, timeout.
That timeout was so stupid. Just, you waste your last timeout to kick a field goal from the 3-yard line.
It is a really rough sequence. And then, like, Alabama decides, like, oh, you know what? I'm going to make this somehow miraculous catch to get the first down to end the game.
That was fantastic. I can't even tell you. Milrow decided
to also be an idiot and throw.
He tried to pull a crystal ball.
Tried to throw be a crystal ball, man.
I can't like, I don't tell understand. You how loud I was screaming at the TV at that moment. I felt so much rage in my body and just stress, confusion. I felt every emotion in that moment because you just have this miraculous third down conversion that came out of nowhere. And then you go straight to throw the ball when all you have to do is just take a knee. You just have to drop down on the ground and the game's over. But no, Alabama decides that they just want to stress
they're
me
giving
out
you,
more.
They were giving a preview of what was to come later on tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely an impressive win. I mean, obviously, Jalen did what he needed to do. At the end of the day, it was only 24 points that the offense scored, so not a ton. But with the defense, that's the winning combination for him this year for sure. Oh. It wasn't pretty. They weren't really able to consistently run the ball, which is what everybody's really kind of expecting. But the A&M defensive front is solid. But I mean, if you're Alabama, you feel really good about where you're at. The only game on the schedule that should scare you at this point is LSU. Wouldn't be scared at Tennessee. Auburn's not very good this year. So you got one game really coming up, and then it's Atlanta if you get there.
Yeah, I think we're both going to have to get used to winning ugly for the rest of the year because so far all of our wins have been ugly for both sides.
The only exception are the Mississippi State games for both of us.
For us, it's we have to win by defense, and for y'all, it's win by offense. So.
Yes, we have to score like 50 points every single game. Oh my gosh, it's rough. It's rough, Mason. Okay, any other Notre Dame got smacked by Louisville. How fun
yes,
was that?
Yes, that was awesome. The week after, we told everybody to watch out for Louisville. So look at us, a little pat on the back.
Look at us, man. Look at us. Kentucky decided to not play defense.
Dude, I have never turned off a game that fast in my life. Georgia goes up 21-0, and I was done.
Yeah, you know what it reminded me of? And like, it wasn't the exact like stylistically how it happened, but it reminded me a couple years ago when Arkansas, who was undefeated, went into Stanford Stadium and got run out the building in like the first 5 minutes of the game. Do you remember that?
Yes.
That's yes. Exactly what it reminded me of.
I didn't even think about that in the moment, but yes.
Like, as I was watching it and seeing Kentucky just not be able to do anything on defense, I was like, this is that. Wow. And the fact that they had like all these stupid penalties that screwed themselves over on offense when they were moving the ball is just like maddening. Like,
did you see what Stoops said? I think it was this morning.
I loved it. Oh, I loved buddy. It, dude.
Well, so I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was basically like, hey, to our donors, if you want a better team, pay more money. That's what everybody basically else is doing. This so give us some more money. Great, great quote right there.
Love him. Love it. He's definitely a Stoops brother.
Oh, yeah.
I love it, dude. But yeah, that was probably the most disappointing thing. And I think it also kind of goes back to, hey, is Florida really just that bad and Kentucky really not that good? I mean, it's...
Oof, Florida.
I hate to bring up Florida because I don't even know if they played this week. Oh, they played Vanderbilt, but yeah. I mean,
it's Vandy. Come on,
it is Vandy. So congratulations, you won. But yeah, man, it's just the East is, again has now come back. We kind of had this little bit of hope for the East before this week happened, like, oh wow, Kentucky is actually really good. I might get Georgia game, man. Maybe Missouri. Yeah. I mean, Missouri's still pretty good. I mean, they were in a shootout, but I mean, it's just Kentucky sucks still. And
every time I watch the East right now, I just get so excited that we're going divisionless, and it's just one big old conference. I just can't wait.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be nice. I was about to say something and I completely forgot. Oh yeah, Georgia hadn't covered all season long. all year they haven't covered a single time, and then they're like, you know what, we're just gonna like skull drag Kentucky.
I don't know what the over under on that game was, but I'm sure they probably covered it that by themselves.
Oh, I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did. Absolutely did. Absolutely.
But okay, so does it change how you look at Georgia at all for the year? Or is it still just like, that was probably just a worse Kentucky team than we thought it was going to be, and they're still just kind of, eh?
I mean, I think it changes my perspective on what I think the Georgia offense is, because they're definitely a passing team. They're not a running team this year. I don't know how I fully feel about their defense yet. I mean, it's still pretty good. They only gave up 13 points, but Kentucky was still able to move the ball. They're just tons of mistakes by them when it comes to penalties and all that kind of stuff. And for whatever reason, Devin Leary just forgot how to be accurate with the football, which is it's really weird. Like, he was known for being an accurate passer, and then now he can sometimes hardly hit the broadside of a barn. Like, it's okay. So
coming
weird.
Back to an offseason discussion, are you taking Milroe or are you taking Leary right now?
I mean, with how Leary's playing, I guess I'll take Milroe.
Isn't that crazy? What is happening right now in college football?
But I mean, I come away being impressed with Georgia because they hadn't shown a dominant performance yet this year, and they finally put it all together. Now, can they do that consistently? No idea. Is this just a flash in the pan because it was just a buzzsaw that Kentucky ran into, and somehow Kirby Smart, because Kentucky was undefeated and just killed Florida, that they just had him up this game? I don't know. I mean, we'll just wait and see. I just think this is going to be kind of an up and down year for Georgia throughout the year, where I think they're probably going to win all their games because there's not a ton of competition in the East. Tennessee's not nearly as good. Florida's awful. I mean, Missouri might give them a game, but that's also at Georgia. But I mean, they don't really have much competition. So, I mean, I think it's just going to be one of those kind of things where it's like, hey, they look really good one week, and then they just kind of hardly show up the next week but win. And I think it's just going to be that kind of season for them.
After this weekend, I can't tell you how upset I was the fact that we did not get Georgia Oklahoma to start the season. I mean, dude, that is rough after watching what happened this weekend. It was brutal. I mean, it would have been a great win for either one of them at the time, but man, stupid Oklahoma having to come to the SEC.
Oh, darn, they're coming to the SEC. How dare they should have just kept the game on the schedule. Like, who freaking cares?
Yeah, I was going to say, just schedule Texas for Georgia next year, and it's fine.
Stupid. Stupid is what it is. Okay. Any other games that I might want to touch on? I think we're good. I think we'll end with that. Let's go ahead and go to the next part of the podcast, which is the Down to the Wire poll. Mason, did you see the little cool graphic that we have now, man?
Yes. Hey,
look at that. Look at us being nice and clean with the graphic. We'll go ahead and you know what? We'll go ahead and plug this. We did kind of a stealthy release, Mason, this past week. Of our video podcast.
Oh,
didn't announce it to anybody. We just went ahead and did it, but we have video of our podcast now up, going posted every single week on Rumble, not on YouTube, because YouTube has tons of people, and you know what, Rumble doesn't. Then we don't have much competition, so that's where we're gonna get our eyeballs. So if you want to watch us and you want to see the graphic as we're talking about it, it'll be up on the screen for you as we go through it. But if you want to listen and watch at the same time, go over to Rumble. We'll have that linked in the description in the podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. Go over and listen there. We'll get that going. So again, on Rumble, we have also updated our social media X or Twitter handle. It is at Down to the Wire CM, just like our email. So Down to the Wire CM. Go ahead and follow us on X or Twitter or whatever the heck you want to call it. And then on Instagram, we are at Down to the Wire Podcast. So that's the social media. So video podcast there now. We have our graphic updated now for our poll. So that's going to be coming out every single week for you guys. We're stepping up. our game, Mason. We're looking a little bit more professional here as we're getting going. All right. So let's go ahead and get into the down to the wire top 25. Like we said last week, we seem to have cursed Texas at our number one spot. Maybe we can do the same for this team, even though I think they might be on bye, actually. I don't remember. No, they're playing Vanderbilt. So Georgia.
Oh, Georgia, number one. Texas was playing Vandy.
No. At number one, we have Georgia. They play Vandy this week. I think it would be the biggest shock in college football history.
Yes.
Somehow Vanderbilt upset Georgia. We did a curse on Georgia as being our number one team. But number one, back at number one, is Georgia. At number two, we have Michigan, followed by Florida State and Ohio State. And then to round out the top five, we have Penn State. Next, we have Oklahoma. Big jump up after beating Texas this past weekend. They are at number six. At number seven, we have the Oregon Ducks. And they're having a top 10 clash with Washington, who is at number eight this week. Texas falls all the way from one to nine. So they fall all the way down to number nine. But they are ahead of an undefeated team that is USC, the Trojans, after surviving three overtimes against Arizona this past weekend. They are at number 10. Bama really kind of sticks in the same spot. They're at number 11, still there, right outside the top 10. At number 12, we have North Carolina. They just keep climbing up and climbing up and climbing up every week, Mason. They're getting up there close to the top 10. Ole Miss is at number 13. At 14, we have the team that we pimped out a couple weeks ago, the Louisville Cardinal, after destroying Notre Dame at home. At number 15, we have Oregon State. They've been kind of hanging around between the 15 and 20 area most of the year. At 16, we have Duke. At 17, we have Utah. The Tennessee Volunteers are at 18, and then 19, we have Washington State. At 20, we have UCLA, which to me doesn't really make sense that we have those at 19 and 20, because UCLA just beat Washington State this past weekend. It is what it is, I guess. At 21, we have the LSU Tigers. At 22, we have a huge drop from Notre Dame. I think they were at 11 last week. They fall 11 spots down to number 22. Kansas at 23, followed by Kentucky. I didn't have Kentucky ranked in my top 25, I don't think, but they're still ranked in our combined one here at 24 after the embarrassment they just had. And another embarrassment that happened over the weekend, they're still ranked, is Miami, finishing out at number 25. So give me your thoughts on the poll this week.
I'm having a really hard time with USC right now. Honestly, like, I know they're undefeated, so they kind of need to be in the top 10 or 11 right now, but I just don't have the same type of confidence in them right now as I do the other two Pac-12 schools that are ahead of them in Oregon and Washington. It's just something about them, man. Like, I know their defense is terrible, but they do have Caleb Williams. I don't have the same confidence in them as I would like to. So I've been trying to find a way to get them lower and lower as I go. I think they're this weekend against Notre Dame is going to be a huge test for them. So I'm interested to watch that one. Like you said, man, North Carolina just keeps rising and rising. Drake May has been playing incredible. He's going to be able to keep them in any single game. And also their defense is sneaky right now. I'm not going to act like they're world beaters, but they are sneaky and they can get some stops when they need to. What else? Yeah, the Washington State UCLA won. That was partially my fault. I did have Washington State over UCLA. I just have a hard time with UCLA right now.
Come on, head to head.
That was on me. That was on me. I take the blame for that one. What else? Ohio State at four. I still don't know how I feel about Ohio State either. I'm just in a weird space right now. There's a lot of teams that I don't know how I actually feel. I think my heart is telling me not to like them, but my head is telling me that I have to, especially with Ohio State. But yeah, man, Oklahoma at six, I feel like they could be bumped up a little bit more. And it's just solid poll, man. Solid poll. We do a good job.
Yeah, and listen, this is the way that we want you guys involved in the show each and every week. Send us your rankings. This is the people's poll, guys. Okay, yeah. Screw the AP, all right, and screw the sports writers. We don't care what they have to say. We don't care what they have to think, because they don't even care about the sport anyways. We know you care. We care. So we're going to make this the poll of the people. So give us your rankings every single week, and we're going to get this thing to the moon, okay? Us and the JP poll go hand in hand, and we'll just ride into the sunset with that, okay?
And look, Cam has agreed to chug a beer for every single entry into our polls. So
whoa.
If you want to see Cam chug a beer, just send us your poll, and he'll do it on camera.
Mason, I don't want to get alcohol poisoning. I mean, come on. yeah, so go ahead and do that. Now, will I, you know, shotgun some beers? Maybe. We'll see how that goes. yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you. I had Oklahoma right at 6. I have Oregon actually in my poll all the way up to 5. I'm really high on Oregon. And I have Georgia at 3.
I have Oregon at 4. I just realized that. Good Lord. So yeah, you have Georgia at 3?
Who's
you?
I have Michigan at 1 and Florida State 2 and then Georgia 3.
Boo.
I know you're a Florida State hater, okay? It's fine. You know, we can't always be right, Mason. Yeah, I know. But
it is what it is, I guess. I'll accept my loss when it comes, but you know, right now I'm just going to write it.
You know, you got another loss you got to accept here, Mason, because you lost yet again in fantasy football this week.
Cam, I thought we were just going to skip over this for the week. We have to do this.
Hey, this is your thing, remember? So you can blame yourself for this.
Yes, I can. All right.
I have taken over.
So you, Cam, this is hard to say, really. You beat me by 50 points this week. 104 to 54. You beat me. You beat me with two players, Cam. Two. I don't have anything else to say. It was terrible. You're on a 4-game win streak. I am at the lowest of lows at this point. And I just – it was rough, okay? I was feeling all right because Jaden Daniels wasn't going supernova in the first half. And then the second half, he was like, you know what? I think I'll just run for 100 yards and 2 touchdowns and then go from there. And it murdered me, okay? Him alone, Cam, he scored 41 points. And I, with 5 guys, scored 54. Okay, I was in the hole to just immediately start. Okay, 11 o'clock, I was done.
Yeah, all your players played early, and so I had 2 players, and they were in the same game. It was Luther Burden and Jane Daniels played. And so I had already beaten you with your 5 players that had already played, and I still had 3 players still to go.
Terrible. That was terrible. It was a rough weekend, okay? We are going to move on, Cameron. We are done. We are done with week 6. All right. I might just rip it out of my little notebook here and get rid of it. Light it on fire or something. All right. Week 7. I'm going to try and break this little skid I got going on right here because I got to get back into the game. All right. My quarterback. I'm going with the legend, your favorite quarterback of all time, Bo Nix, against Washington.
Is he playing Georgia?
No, not I would not make that mistake, Cam. I know I'm on a 4-game skid, but I would not do that. At running back, I'm going with Blake Corum. At my wide receiver, I'm going with Jermaine Burton from Alabama, trying to build off that strong game that he had against Texas A&M. At tight end, I'm going with Ben Sinnott from Kansas State. Kansas State, our tight end shot of the week right there. And my flex, I'm going with Jawar Jordan from Louisville. Had a huge game against Notre Dame. I'm hoping he keeps it up again this week. So that's what I got. What you got for me?
Yeah, so that was the losing lineup yet again that you're listening to. Here's the winning lineup for this week. And Mason, I'll try and just end it early again for you again, okay? At quarterback, I'm going, hey, they're playing Vanderbilt, so let's go with quarterback there. Carson Beck from Georgia, that'll be an easy win for me, okay? Running back, I'm going with Audric Estime because USC has no defense. at wide receiver. You know, I've been waiting to play this guy, and it's in a big game, so he's going to show out. I'm going with Rome Odunze from Washington. At tight end, I'm going with Jake Johnson at A&M. He's been having a solid couple weeks, two straight weeks, I believe, with touchdowns, so I'm going with him, hoping to keep it going. And then at flex, I'm going with the wide receiver over at Louisville, Jeremiah Thrash. So that's, again, the fifth consecutive winning lineup for you right there. I'm about to bust this thing open, keep continually crushing your heart. You know what? There's always next year, Mason.
Look, we've got, like, what, 6 weeks left at this point? 5 weeks? So it's going to start getting a little rough here. If I drop this one, it could be over quick, okay?
All right. So let's go ahead and move on to picks. We have actually quite a few games because it's a pretty decent lineup of games this week. Some sneaky ones, Mason. We both kind of had, again, rough weeks in picks. Again, I win a game better than you, so I'm still winning in the picks department. You went 2-5-1 last week. So you're even further in the hole. You're at 25-30-3 for the year so far in the picks. I didn't do much better this week. I went 3-4-1. But I'm still positive. I'm at 30-25-3. So I have a full 5-game lead on you, Mason. Okay. You need to get it together. All right. Yeah. And you need to get positive, at least be positive in your picks this week, in your picks for the year, Mason. That's what we're asking for. Okay. We need to be positive. Right. We can't be under 500. Let's get it together here. Okay.
I got to make the people money. All right.
Got to make some people some money. All right. Make some people some money here. So, we have Arkansas at Alabama. It's homecoming in Tuscaloosa. Huge spread. Alabama is a 19.5-point favorite. Arkansas is just in a horrible slump with losses. They've lost to BYU, LSU, Texas A&M, and Ole Miss, and now staring down the barrel of 5 consecutive losses while going on the road to Alabama. Again, 19.5 points is quite a bit. What do you think?
I think this is going to be the game that officially puts Sam Pittman on the hot seat. So I do think that Alabama is going to win, and I think they're going to win big. So give me the Tide.
Yeah, I mean, typically, and if you've noticed as you've been listening to me making picks, when I see these huge lines of 19 and 17 and 20 plus, I typically go with the cover by the underdog. I'm not feeling it this week, though. I think Sam Pittman is starting to lose his guys. They had their chances against Ole Miss last week. They did cover. But I think Alabama, if there is going to be a disappointment or a letdown, I think this is the spot for Alabama against Arkansas. But I think since it is at home, though, I really do like Alabama, and I think they do cover the 17.5. I think, like I said, I picked Arkansas to be last in the division this year in the West, and so I think this is just going to keep going that way. So I am going to go Alabama as well. Next one is the game of the week, Mason. Oregon at Washington. Washington is a 3-point favorite at home. Game of the week, game in the Pac-12 for probably would be the team to beat in the Pac-12 moving forward. The Ducks and the Huskies. Big rivalry apparently between these two. Didn't really know. And yeah, that's also because we don't live out west, so we wouldn't really know, and we're not in Pac-12 country, but apparently big rivalry between these two. So, Washington or Oregon, what do you think?
So Washington's been trying to steal my heart here for the last couple weeks, but Oregon still has a grip on me, baby. They were my Pac-12 pick coming into the season, so I'm sticking with the Ducks, and I'm taking them in this game.
Yeah, I really like Oregon too.
Not cover.
Yeah, I really, win. Yeah, to cover and win.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like Oregon too. I think they're just the more complete football team, but I think it's going to be a great, great game. You're going to want to watch this the whole way if you can, but I do like Oregon, the Ducks, and Bo Nix and the guys to get it done. I just think their defense is going to be a little bit better and be able to make some stops when they need to, more so than Washington. So yeah, I like Oregon as well. All right, next game is Texas A&M going on the road to Tennessee. This is, again, part of the tough stretch for Texas A&M. After a tough loss to Alabama at home, they then get shipped off to Knoxville to play Tennessee. Tennessee is actually a 3.5-point favorite in this one, Mason. Do you feel like the right team is favored, or do you like the home team?
So if you've watched much of Tennessee so far this year, you know that they are not throwing the ball as well as they were last year, and they have actually pretty much turned into a running team, which is not working against Texas A&M. So I'm actually going to go with Texas A&M in this game, and I actually feel pretty good about it. I don't think Tennessee is going to be able to move the ball very well against them. So, yeah, give me Texas A&M.
You know, I was kind of thinking that too, Mason, but we've got to make some differences here in our picks.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I'm actually going to go Tennessee covering because Neyland Stadium is insane. And this is the biggest game besides the Georgia game this year for these Tennessee fans. I think they're going to show up. I think they're going to be loud and rowdy like they always are. And you know what? I think this is going to be the breakout game for the Tennessee offense passing the football. A&M has struggled covering the pass, especially the deep pass this year, as you saw against Miami and as you saw against Alabama. And that's what Tennessee wants to do. They want to throw, if they can, their best version of themselves is to take those deep shots. And I think they're going to be able to take and finally convert on some of those Joe Milton. And so I like Tennessee and I like them to win and cover against the Aggies, and the train for firing Jimbo doesn't stop. All right. It's still full steam ahead. All right. Next up, we got a Big 12 matchup, Kansas at Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State played Kansas State at home last week and took care of business after it seemed like they were dead in the water after losing at home against South Alabama earlier on in the year. Kansas is going to be without Jalen Daniels. He is hurt with the back, so the backup quarterback is back in. And they're still a 3-point road favorite, Mason. What do you think?
The fact that they're a 3-point road favorite with their backup quarterback scares me. When it comes to the line, but I don't really quite understand how they would be able to go into Oklahoma State and actually pull that out with their backup. So I'm going to go with Oklahoma State. I don't feel great about it because Vegas probably knows something that I don't. So give me Oklahoma State with a question mark, asterisk, whatever you want to put next to it. Frowny face, whatever.
You know, Mason, last week my lock of the week was Maryland covering against Ohio State, and it ended up being a push because we luckily got it at Ohio State minus 20 instead of the 19.5 like it was the day before when I filled these out. Nice. And so I kind of got bailed out there by a push, but Oklahoma State this week is going to be my lock of the week. Oklahoma State, since they're at home again, they showed their defense is still nasty. Their quarterback is playing well. They play well, complementary football. And again, Kansas doesn't have their best quarterback, which is when they've been winning all these games, when they've had any kind of win streak and had a ton of success. And it's with Jalen Daniels, and he's not playing. And so I really like Oklahoma State to not just cover, but to outright win against Kansas this weekend. Next one, we have kind of an ugly one, Florida at South Carolina. Billy Napier is still like 1-8 on the road as the Florida head coach going into Columbia. And South Carolina is a 2-point favorite, Mason. Do you like South Carolina covering the 2, or does Florida finally find another road win?
You saying that this game is kind of an ugly one is a very generous statement by you. This one is very gross. I'm going to go with South Carolina. I think Spencer Rattler is going to have his way against Florida. So give me the Gamecocks.
Yeah, and again, Billy Napier can't win on the road. Florida can't win on the road. And they're on the road against South Carolina. And that place is going to be buzzing because it's Florida. So yeah, I'm going to go South Carolina. I will say, though, if there is going to be a road game that Florida can win besides Vanderbilt, obviously, I think it's going to be this one. And the reason I say that is because South Carolina on the offensive and defensive fronts, that's the weak point. And what does Florida want to do? They want to run the ball. and their defensive front is good at stopping the run and getting after them and playing usually good defense, with Kentucky obviously being the outlier there. But if there is a path for Florida, it is going to be their normal style of play. Keep the ball away from Spencer Sanders, run the ball. But I just don't see it. Or did I say Spencer Sanders? Spencer Rattler. I caught myself like 5 seconds later. But yeah, I still like South Carolina winning and covering, but I wouldn't be too surprised if somehow Florida pulled it out. Next one, we have the Tiger Bowl, Mason. Back-to-back Tiger Bowls for LSU. Auburn at LSU. LSU is a 11-point favorite. Auburn coming off of a bye after disappointingly losing to Georgia when they hadn't close. LSU still racking up the points in the yards on offense. Defense may be improving. They're going to have to show that they can stop the run this week. Do you like LSU covering, or what do you think?
I don't feel great about ever saying, or at least for the rest of the year, saying that LSU is going to beat anybody by 11 just with how bad their defense has been. But Auburn's defense has been equally, or Auburn's offense has been equally as bad as LSU's defense. So I don't quite see how they'll be able to keep up with LSU. So I am going to go with LSU in this game, but I do kind of feel like it's going to just going to be a gross game all around.
Yeah, I can kind of see it being a gross game too, but I just think LSU is always going to be able to score when they have the ball.
Yeah.
And Auburn's just not going to be able to. They'll score points for sure, but I think LSU will be able to get just enough stops because Auburn can't throw the ball to save their lives. And LSU's just going to stop up to stop the run. And Auburn has no weapons on the outside. So I wouldn't. This is going to be the one game that I don't feel super scared of for the LSU secondary, which is weird. But that's just because Auburn has no talent on the outside. So I also like LSU covering the 11 at home. Have four more games, Mason. Almost there. Next one is USC at Notre Dame. Notre Dame coming off of a very disappointing loss against Louisville on the road. USC also coming off of a scare and a 3-overtime hard-fought win against Arizona at home. They're finally going on the road. Notre Dame is actually a 2.5-point favorite, though, Mason. Do you like USC getting it done and staying undefeated, or do you like Notre Dame ending the hopes and dreams of the Trojans?
Man, this is a tough one, man. To me, this is probably the hardest game to pick so far, and probably for the rest of the slate, too. I'm going to go with Notre Dame. I think they're going to be able to ground and pound USC to death. Audric Estime has been incredible so far this year, so I do think Notre Dame's going to win and cover. But there is something in the back of my head saying that Caleb Williams is just going to go nuclear. But I am going to stick with Notre Dame. I think they'll take it.
You know, I don't think this is as hard of a game, at least for me to pick. I'm totally going Notre Dame here. I had already called in the preseason that USC is going to lose a couple of games this year because their defense just isn't good enough. And I think this is a game that Sam Hartman's going to be able to pass and keep the ball rolling. Andre Estime is going to be able to run the ball at will, and Notre Dame's going to be able to score points, and they're going to be able to stop USC. Caleb Williams and that offense for USC has not been humming like a lot of people had expected. Now, whether that's just because they've been taking it easy because they think they have easy games or whatever, but they're going on a true road game against Notre Dame, and Notre Dame is going to desperately want this game, especially after the embarrassment they just had. They're going to come out with their hair on fire, especially on defense after the defensive performance. Their offense is going to play really well, I think. So I really like Notre Dame, and I think they might even win by 2 scores.
Oh, wow.
Calling it out. Okay. Calling it out now. Miami at North Carolina. Embarrassment for Miami. They go on the road to Chapel Hill, and North Carolina is a 3.5-point favorite with Drake May. Do you like North Carolina covering here after the embarrassment Miami had last week?
This is an easy one for me. Give me North Carolina all day. I think Drake May is going to go crazy. I think they do win by probably 10+.
Yeah, I like North Carolina as well. I think Miami is still a year or two away from being a consistent presence in the ACC. And when you lose a game like you did last week, it's hard to come back from that. And Drake May is just unbelievable right now. They also have Tez Walker coming back. Thank God. And NCAA, y'all are clowns.
Yeah.
North Carolina cover easy. Two more Mason SEC clash against two teams that had disappointing performances for themselves after having hype all week. Missouri, after losing to LSU in a shootout, going on the road to Kentucky after getting embarrassed on the national stage against Georgia. Kentucky is a 2.5-point favorite at home. Do you like the underdog or do you like the Mildcats?
So the one thing I noticed about the LSU-Missouri game is that LSU was basically able to do whatever they wanted in the run game. So I do think that Kentucky is going to have a lot of success against them this game. So I'm going with Kentucky. I think it'll be close. It'll probably be about 3 or 4 if I had to guess, but I am going Kentucky.
Not so fast, my friend, pulling out Shout out Lee Corso. Going Missouri Tigers here. They're going to outright win this one against Kentucky and show the world what frauds Kentucky really is. Okay. I will say the point that you just made of LSU being able to run the ball and do whatever they want to, I think that was a little bit by design maybe this week of Missouri, because the previous weeks they've been pretty decent at defending their run. But it was pretty obvious that they didn't try to not give up the deep pass to LSU, so they kind of gave up some running lanes. Maybe that was just because LSU is just better and they could run the ball. I don't know. But I actually do really like Missouri. I think they'll be able to stop the run, and I think they're going to be able to score with Luther Burden and all those guys on the outside. So I like Missouri to go and win outright in Lexington. And then last game of the week that we're picking, Mason, UCLA at Oregon State. I feel like this could be another defensive battle for UCLA. Oregon State is a 4-point favorite. Did you know they scored like 50 plus points in their last game? Oregon State did. Insane. Do you like Oregon State covering the 4 at home?
So UCLA actually has a really sneaky good defense, which has been surprising to me because you don't necessarily think of UCLA as a defensive minded team. With that being said, I am going to rock with Oregon State though. Like you just said, they put up 50 this last week. And I do like the way that DJ has been playing, surprisingly enough. So I think I'm going to go with Oregon State.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go Oregon State too. UCLA definitely does have a really good defense. And like you said, you wouldn't really think that, especially if a Chip Kelly coach team. I still think though that with their quarterback, with Dante Moore, they're still trying to figure things out with him and try and figure out the offense. And being on the road is tough, especially at Oregon State. That's a hard place to play. And like you said, DJ is playing really well. So I'm going to go Oregon State as well to win and cover the 4. So that's picks this week. Mason, let's see how you do. Let's see if you can start to climb out of being 500, over 500 for the year. So let's try and get there. But yeah, that's it. Any final words on the podcast this week before we head into week 7?
Nope. I gave you everything I got this week.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Stay on the lookout for maybe something special coming up soon, and we will catch you guys on the next one.